From State College to Greensburg, Saxonburg to Waynesburg, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, inflation continues to haunt Pennsylvania businesses, according to the Spring 2025 Keystone Business Climate Survey. Greg Moreland from the National Federation of Independent Businesses here with a look at the numbers. The California Clean Air Act would have effectively banned gas-powered vehicles nationwide. Eric Boehm of Reason Magazine talks with Darren Bask of the Competitive Enterprise Institute about why the U.S. Senate put an end to the mandate. And the U.S. House of Representatives has advanced President Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill with the support of all 10 Republican members of Pennsylvania's congressional delegation. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania talks about it on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Greg Moreland from the National Federation of Independent Business in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. President Donald Trump has put his seal of approval on the U.S. Steel-Nippon Steel deal. The president had previously opposed the plan, but after negotiating with the Japanese steelmaker, Nippon upped its pledged investment in the United States. While it remains somewhat unclear what the exact terms of the, quote, planned partnership announced by Trump are, what is clear is that U.S. Steel will continue to be headquartered in Pittsburgh, and according to Trump, the deal will create at least 70,000 jobs and add $14 billion to the U.S. economy. Nippon will now invest billions of dollars to modernize aging U.S. steel plants in the Mon Valley, securing the jobs of thousands of Pennsylvania workers. A new report by Broad and Liberty finds the administration of Governor Josh Shapiro withheld rows of metadata in response to a document request by the website. The internal administration information was sought as Broad and Liberty investigates the governor's handling of a scandal involving his former Secretary of Legislative Affairs, Mike Verb. Verb resigned after having been accused of sexually harassing a coworker. Just a few weeks ago, Broad and Liberty reported that the Shapiro administration had deleted the email account of the young lady who made the allegations against Verb. The story notes that under Pennsylvania law, it is, quote, a criminal offense to knowingly destroy public records. Former Pennsylvania State Supreme Court Justice J. Michael Eakin, who served on the high court for 14 years, has passed away at the age of 76. Former State Supreme Court Chief Justice Ronald Castile, who served on the bench with Eakin, said, quote, his contributions to the law and to the enforcement of the law as a district attorney should be remembered. Eakin had also been a former Cumberland County district attorney. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The impact of inflation, which has soared over 20% during the past 4 years, continues to be the biggest problem confronting business owners and managers. That was the key finding of the 2025 Keystone Business Climate Survey, which is conducted semi-annually by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research. Here with analysis of the poll numbers is Greg Moreland. He is Pennsylvania State Director of the National Federation of Independent Business. Greg, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Greg, the Spring 2025 Keystone Business Climate Survey, of course, one of the things we frequently ask businesses, what are the major problems that they're facing? And it was fairly consistent for many years, changed a lot as many things did after 2020. It seems like inflation continues to be bedeviling businesses large and small.
Yeah, it's been a real problem for our small business members. The price of their goods has increased over the last several years, and some industries more than others. But I think that inflation and the cost of goods, we're experiencing this on a daily basis when we go to the gas station, when we go to the grocery store, and it's affecting our small businesses all the same, right? Their products are going up in cost, and they really only have one outlet to alleviate some of that pain. It's the small business industry. They can either eat that money and make less profit, or they can pass it on to the consumers. And let's be honest, our small business owners aren't millionaires, multimillionaires oftentimes, right? So they really have only one relief valve there, and that's to raise prices on consumers.
And that appears to be what has happened in a number of cases. But what's interesting, we further asked whether the impact of inflation was significant. We had 40% that said it was significant, and another 43% that said it was moderate. So that's over 80%.
Yeah. I mean, it's an amazing number, right? I think that there hasn't been one industry that has been not touched by inflation. And so I think it's a wide-ranging problem. We obviously now are experiencing a little bit with the tariffs and the cost of goods potentially going up. But President Trump has been pretty quick on this, and it hasn't been lingering out there for too long, and you know, looks like we're going to get a deal with China. Mm-hmm. And so I think some of the long-term angst and fear about pricing was how long is this going to stretch out and how long is this going to play out? But I think from our perspective, the tariffs and inflation are certainly troublesome. But I think many of our folks see the long-term goals here, though.
We did ask folks whether or not tariffs were having a positive or negative impact. It was split. About 42% said positive because, let's face it, we have had an unfair playing field with many of our trading partners, and it puts our domestic companies at a disadvantage. But about a third said that the tariffs were impacting them negatively. Another 20% said it's too early to tell. So do you think that's the too early to tell is more the case here than anything else?
I do. I think it is too early to tell, quite honestly. And I also think it depends on the day of the week that these folks answered the questions, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of those issues that are causing concern for the business community, second, right behind inflation, were current economic conditions, also future economic conditions, a bit unsettled out there at the moment?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of uncertainty, and that's what we've seen here at NFIB. We've seen a lot of our numbers come back from our members just saying they're uncertain about the next 6 months. They don't necessarily know if it's going to be better, worse, mm-hmm. or about the same, right? And so they're really, you know, kind of holding their cash on hand. They're not making major purchases or making major endeavors and expanding their business right now. They're kind of holding their cash and they want to see how this all plays out. But then again, you look at their third most commented on one, which is locating qualified employees.
Yep.
This is dating back prior to even the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Where are the workers, right? We have a lot of folks sitting on the sidelines right now that aren't involved in the workforce, but they are of working age, they have no dependents, and they're collecting social assistance. And so hopefully we'll see some of these folks coming back to the workforce here as legislation moves on the federal and state level. We'll get some of these workers back into the workforce, have them paying taxes and being gainfully employed.
It's interesting, Greg. We've been taking this survey twice a year now for 30 years, actually. So we have quite a historical record to look at. Until relatively recently, the last 5 or 6 years, taxes always was the biggest concern of businesses, followed by regulation. But in this survey, taxes and regulation have sort of fallen off to almost an afterthought.
It has. We're in such a politically charged environment, unfortunately, right now. I think that whichever way you lean, there are some strong feelings on either side, and some of these policies are seen as divisive. And I think it all depends on where you stand personally, right? Mm-hmm. I think if you put your business owner and business owner hat on simply, then it really is about taxes, and it's about that bottom line. It's about ensuring that you can make payroll on Friday morning and that your employees are getting paid. And you know, you might have to go without a paycheck this pay period, but at least your employees are getting paid. I think from business owners, we're still seeing a lot of concern about the economy, taxes, inflation, supply chain. But I think that optimism, while shaky right now, I think we will start to see it level out and we will start to see our economic conditions improving.
You did mention the fact that a lot of businesses are having difficulty finding and keeping qualified employees. And one of the components of the One Big Beautiful Bill, as it's called, that's going through Congress, is a work requirement for getting Medicaid assistance. Do you see the whole issue of, first of all, reauthorizing the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act and the fact that that could put more people back in the workforce? Is this a positive thing? Is this something businesses need? Because I think there was a provision in that act that really benefited small business in particular.
Yeah, absolutely. So NFIB has been working day and night for several years now to get the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, mainly the 20% small business tax deduction, reauthorized. Without that provision being reauthorized, you know, our small businesses and individuals are going to be in for a very large tax increase. Okay. So we need to get those reauthorized. Absolutely, for sure. The work provisions in there, I think the largest component of Medicaid right now are single males with no dependents of working age. And I don't know. I went to work at 14 at McDonald's, not because my parents made me, but because I wanted a little extra change in my pocket, right? I wanted to not live off of somebody else's dole. I wanted to make my own and have my own money.
We are talking with Greg Moreland, the state director for the National Federation of Independent Business. We are discussing results of the Spring 2025 Keystone Business Climate Survey. And Greg, every survey that we've taken over these 30 years, we've always asked this one question. In general, do you think business conditions in Pennsylvania are better, the same, or worse than they were 6 months ago? Once again, and this has been the story for the last 6 or 7 years, we see by more than a 2-to-1 margin, the businesses responding, large and small, are finding that business conditions are getting worse.
I think what you're seeing is kind of a reflection of the attitude of the federal government right now and the change in administration and the dramatic change in policy from one administration to another. If we look back 6 months ago, we're starting at beginning December, late December, right? That's after the election, before a new president came in. You know, I think that the tariffs have had a major effect on that. And I think that we're going to shortly see a lot of those fears kind of dissipate. And I would expect a slightly different reading, I would say, in the fall, once this has kind of played out a little bit. But I will say that they did have better outlook on the future conditions. Yeah. And the majority of respondents believed that business sales would increase or remain the same over the next 6 months. So while some in the business community are saying that it's worse from 6 months ago, they're expecting it to then get better in 6 months. So I think that's an interesting perspective.
And we are only, 4 or 5 months into the Trump administration. So a lot of the policies that the president is pursuing have yet to really kick in. The economy doesn't turn on a dime.
No, I mean, President Trump has been working at warp speed thus far, it appears. But still, government does not just flip a switch and dramatically change overnight. These are long processes. There's legislation that needs to be gone through. The political and policy process is not one that is as quick as the private market and the private enterprise where you can make decisions and change overnight.
One of the aspects of the business climate survey is that we always ask a question about the job performance of various elected and appointed officials. We have our first numbers here for President Donald Trump in his second term, about half positive, a little less, 43% negative. What do you make of that?
You know, I think when you take that positive at almost 50 and you take the negative at almost 43, it's 93. There's only 7% of people that don't have an opinion about President Trump. I think if you look through these numbers, you see that some have no opinion as high as, 39, 40, 47%. They have no opinion for some of these elected officials. But everybody has a position on President Trump. I think it's an interesting one. I think it's reflected nationally. I think you would see similar numbers, quite honestly.
Yeah, it does track the national numbers fairly well. Governor Josh Shapiro, who is up for re-election next year, he's about the same place as President Trump is, just under 50% positive, a lower negative at about 29%, but about a quarter don't have an opinion of the governor.
Yeah, and I think there's reason that some folks don't necessarily have an opinion about the governor. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because not a whole lot has happened in the Commonwealth in the last 2 years. I think his major crowning achievement is fixing I-95 in 12 days or so.
We'll see if he tries to take credit for President Trump's big deal with U.S. Steel and Nippon. So
yeah, I know our friends in the Manufacturing Association were working very hard on that, and I think that it's all come to a very good resolution. I would like to say that Governor Shapiro was involved in those conversations, but I think word is that
This was pretty much a Donald Trump deal.
Absolutely.
And just to follow up here, we do have three statewide row office or constitutional offices, Attorney General, Auditor General, State Treasurer, very high no opinions. People seem to either not know or not really pay much attention to those offices.
Yeah, they're just kind of the background cast of characters, I think, to the general folks out there. They're just they're supporting office, statewide office holders. But I mean, you tell me what the Auditor General does. I mean, I know what the Auditor General does, yeah. But it's, you know, to the common person, it's not necessarily a job that they think about quite often.
No, but they do perform vital functions.
They do.
We have been talking with Greg Moreland, who is State Director of the National Federation of Independent Business here in Pennsylvania. Greg, tell us a little bit about what NFIB does. Also, where can folks find you?
Sure, absolutely. We are the National Federation of Independent Business. We are a nationwide, nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. And we're simply there to advocate on behalf of our small business owners to own, operate, and grow their business free of intrusive government interference. We think that business owners know best how to operate their business, and government should kind of just get out of the way. And so you can find our information at nfib.org. We do have a Pennsylvania page that you can toggle down to on there. We have a wonderful national effort and a lot of work being done in Congress and a lot of work being done in all 50 state capitals. And so proud of my organization for everything that they've done in the past and will do in the future.
Greg Moreland from the National Federation of Independent Business talking about the Spring 2025 Keystone Business Climate Survey. You can read all the numeric results at lincolninstitute.org or patownhall.com. Greg, we'll do it again in the fall. Thank you.
Sounds good. Thank you.
The U.S. Senate recently overturned the California Clean Air Act, which would have effectively banned gas-powered vehicles across the nation. Eric Boehm of Reason Magazine gets details from Darren Bask of the Competitive Enterprise Institute.
One of the coolest things that Congress does, and I know, there's not a lot of cool things that happen in Congress, but one of the coolest things that Congress can do is use a law called the Congressional Review Act to effectively review and then abolish actions that the executive branch has taken. And as we are recording this right now, the Senate is in the process of doing exactly that, potentially rescinding some Biden EPA waivers that effectively allowed California to rewrite rules for the entire country for cars and trucks that are all over the entire country, not just in California. It's a bit of a crazy in the weeds scenario, but luckily we are joined today by somebody who will talk us through all of that and why the Congressional Review Act is so essential. Hi, folks. I'm Eric Boehm with Reason Magazine. Thanks for joining us on this edition of American Radio Journal. My guest today is Darren Bakst. He's the director of the Center for Energy and Environment at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He joins us now on the phone to talk us through all of this. Darren, thanks for taking some time. I know you're following the action on the Senate floor as we speak right now, so thanks for stepping away from that for just a moment to join us here.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, Eric.
As I say, this is somewhat in flux at the moment, so keep that in mind. By the time you're listening to us, something may have changed here. But Darren, let's go back and start with what the Biden administration did, what Congress is now looking to undo with regard to this waiver that basically allowed California to set new standards for cars.
Yeah, so California has, I think the big one that people are focusing on is California is literally trying to ban the sale of new gas cars by 2035. I want to stress this is not a de facto ban. This is actual, literally a ban on gas-powered cars by 2035. And under the Clean Air Act, other states can kind of adopt California standards. So 11 states have already done that, and D.C. as well. And what happens is when California, let's say they adopt the standards and it kind of can get through and becomes law, it will in effect change the whole national landscape as it relates to cars and trucks. Manufacturers are not going to want to deal with all kinds of different standards and whatever. So in effect, it's very likely that California will be setting the standards for the whole country if allowed to go forward. So under the Clean Air Act, the EPA is allowed to give a waiver to California to move forward with such a rule. And the Biden EPA had a chance to do so for a long time. It was not until the last hour of the Biden administration. Biden was already voted out of office. So in December of 2024, that they gave California the green light to move forward with this gas car ban. And that's what we're dealing with today. The Biden EPA, I believe, improperly gave that waiver, allowing California to go way beyond what it's allowed to do under the Clean Air Act, and also the EPA to go beyond what it can actually authorize, even within the waiver itself. I mean, the EPA itself can't even ban gas cars, as far as I'm concerned, and I think most people would agree. It makes no sense for them to basically then allow California to do that.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, if the EPA tried to do something like that, you'd run into major questions, challenges, all sorts of stuff like that. It's kind of nuts to me that you can have this situation where you have federal bureaucrats effectively handing off regulatory power to state officials. I'm a fan of federalism generally, but this is not the way it's supposed to work. Have one state write rules that effectively become the standard for the country. So, Darren, tell us about what the House has already passed this rescinding of those waivers through the Congressional Review Act. Why is the Congressional Review Act so essential to what's going on here?
Yeah, so just real quick on that, the House did pass this one waiver, this one resolution opposing this waiver. But you had 35 Democrats, by the way, that also supported it, so it was a bipartisan in nature. And there are a couple of other resolutions that are very closely related to one that I just talked to that are, in effect, a way to reshape the national car and truck industry. So the CRA is a law that allows Congress to review rules by agencies. And one of the key benefit of it is there are expedited procedures allowing Congress to kind of consider these rules. And one of them is to get around the Senate filibuster so that in the Senate, you can pass the CRA resolution that disapproves of a rule by a simple majority. So that's kind of the key benefit of it.
Yeah, the Congressional Review Act, one of those really essential checks and balances in the system. I love it. I'm glad that Republicans have kind of dusted this thing off after it sat there for a long time and was really not used until recently. Now it's become much more popular. We're talking with Darren Baxt. He's the director of the Competitive Enterprise Institute's Center for Energy and Environment, chatting about this effort in Congress, an ongoing effort literally happening as we speak. By the time you hear this, it's possible the Senate will have already voted on this CRA and sent it to President Donald Trump's desk. But Darren, I want to finish on something you mentioned there. You said in the House, 35 Democrats also supported this. So this is not a strictly partisan thing. And then you guys at CEI also put out a letter this week with a number of other partners from, you know, think tanks and other entities kind of in some ways across the political spectrum here supporting this effort. I think it's important to underline that this is not a Republican-Democrat thing. Really, these California rules they're outlandish and unpopular.
They are. And so CEI sent a couple letters. Yesterday, sent a letter with, over 50 organizations. And that was that's a pretty significant coalition. I do kind of expect that the Senate Democrats may actually vote against all the resolutions. It's very possible we may not see that bipartisan support for it. We'll see. But I would just stress, quite honestly, you're going to hear all kinds of different arguments. Procedural and the weeds types of arguments as to why they didn't want to vote for it or whatever. Look, this comes down to just some legislators want to ban gas-powered cars. It's just as simple as that.
Yeah, that's a great point, too. I mean, you've got lawmakers who certainly do agree with this, but are too cowardly, honestly, to vote for it themselves. They'd rather hand this off. Hey, let the EPA do it. Let California do it. I don't want it to be my responsibility. I don't have to answer to my voters for it. But that sort of backdoor regulation is just, honestly, it's not the way things are supposed to work. And in a case with this, obviously, it's an unpopular rule and one that hopefully we will soon see swept away. That is, unfortunately, all the time we have for today. Darren, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And once again, that is Darren Baxt. He's the director of the Competitive Enterprise Institute's Center for Energy and Environment. And you can find his work online at CEI.org. And of course, you can follow our ongoing coverage of the tax bill moving through Congress, as well as everything else happening in D.C. and around the country at Reason.com. For Reason Magazine, I'm Eric Boehm.
In an effort to prevent a massive increase in federal income taxes, Congress is working on a reconciliation bill that would extend the 2017 Trump tax cuts. The bill took a major step forward recently, as we learn from Emily Green of Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Fortunately, Washington, D.C. is giving us cause for celebration. President Trump's tax cuts have crossed the first hurdle in the process of making our tax savings permanent. That's right, H.R. 1, or better known as One Big Beautiful Bill, was passed narrowly through the House just before Memorial Day weekend, and now it will be taken up in the Senate chamber. Not for nothing, members of the House endured sleepless nights to get H.R. 1, which is the nomenclature historically reserved for the chamber's top priority legislation, to the Senate before the weekend commenced. It took a lot of hard work and negotiation to get here, which is evident by the 215 to 214 narrow vote. Just shy of 7 a.m. on Thursday, May 22nd, Speaker Mike Johnson successfully passed H.R. 1 through the chamber, which, among many things, allows for your tax cuts to be protected ahead of the 2017 TCJA expiration date at the end of this year. Americans for Prosperity's own Chief Government Affairs Officer, Brent Gardner, issued the following statement after the House vote. On behalf of our network of grassroots activists and small business owners nationwide, AFP congratulates Speaker Johnson, Majority Leader Scalise, Whip Emmer, and all the committee chairs for shepherding this legislation through the U.S. House of Representatives. Thanks to the efforts of policy champions across the House GOP conference, we are one step closer to giving Americans the pro-growth tax policy that they voted for in November. Beyond cementing the foundation for a post-Biden economic recovery, we are poised to embrace an all-of-the-above approach to U.S. energy production and finally secure our southern border. He's right. We thank the 10 Republican members of our PA congressional delegation for delivering for the Commonwealth's taxpayers in a really meaningful way. There's so much in this bill that will help us recover from 4 years of record high inflation driven by the Biden-era reckless Washington spending. With the impending expiration of the tax cuts we've enjoyed since 2017, it's now the time that the Senate gets to work to make this a reality. Through Americans for Prosperity's Protect Prosperity campaign, we are not slowing down now. With over 500 events held across the country, 90,000 doors knocked on a single day of action in key congressional districts, and millions of dollars spent in awareness ads, we are all gas, no brakes. We're simply just turning our attention to the Senate chamber. Join us as we urge the Senate to sprint to the finish line. Head to protectprosperity.com to sign your name to our petition to protect our tax cuts. From there, a member of our team would love to help you find a way to take your next step with AFP. Whether it be joining us on doors, attending an event in your neighborhood, or simply just sharing the protectprosperity.com petition with friends and neighbors in your circle. It is so important that you get involved. Again, that's protectprosperity.com. No matter how you choose to participate, we are so glad you did. Our taxpayer dollars are on the line. This is Emily Green, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 30 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WRXV-FM in Huntingdon, WVMM-FM in Grantham, and WWSM-AM in Lebanon, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.